This morning, America's First News starts right after this. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to GEICO.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
How to pay for the wall. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. Friday, January 27. Welcome aboard. Here's what we have for you this hour.
The White House says a potential option for funding the border wall with Mexico is to tax imports. Meanwhile, a meeting between President Trump and Mexico's president has been nixed.
The first sanctuary city is choosing federal funding over protecting illegals from deportation. Hear the decision by Miami-Dade County.
Could a tension-filled day at a Central Florida middle school. Two teenagers were arrested yesterday in connection with a plot to carry out a shooting there.
And the people who still write checks for things like groceries or a Starbucks coffee.
People want to pay the way they want to pay. And a lot of these people have told me, you know, I'm not a Luddite. I buy things online. But when it comes to certain types of purchases, I just feel more comfortable paying by check. I use credit cards. I use debit cards. But sometimes I just want to pay by check. And it's my right. And if you don't like it, too bad.
On what other radio program, by the way, will you hear the term Luddite? Wall Street Journal reporter Robin Seidel on the check writers. Are they practicing better security than the rest of us? She's here in about 20 minutes. Well, the White House has floated the idea of a 20% import tax to pay for a wall along the length of the Mexican border. As you know, President Trump has vowed that Mexico will pay for it in some way. Mr. Trump had ordered government officials on Wednesday to begin planning a physical wall on the border with Mexico. Here's White House spokesman Sean Spicer.
We can do $10 billion a year and easily pay for the wall just through that mechanism alone. If you think about what a tax, a border tax on imports from countries like Mexico that we have a huge trade deficit does, that's really going to provide the funding.
Mexico, of course, has said it will not pay for the wall. And as part of this diplomatic rift, a scheduled meeting next week between Mr. Trump and Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto has now been canceled. This puts Mr. Trump's plan to renegotiate NAFTA on the back burner for now if he doesn't pull out of it altogether. Meanwhile, the Wall Street Journal says prolonged uncertainty about trade and U.S. relations could hurt Mexico's economy and foreign investment, which slowed noticeably during the last 3 months of 2016 amid uncertainty about the fate of NAFTA. Now, while he's not speaking with Mr. Peña Nieto, he is scheduled to speak tomorrow with Russian President Vladimir Putin. Miami-Dade County is reversing itself when it comes to sanctuary cities after President Trump signed an executive order threatening to withhold federal funding from such cities. Mayor Carlos Jimenez yesterday ordered the Corrections Department to honor requests to hold immigration suspects. He doesn't want to lose out on $355 million in federal funding this year. Mayors in San Francisco, Chicago, and New York have pushed back on Mr. Trump's order. Boston Mayor Marty Walsh even said he would allow undocumented immigrants to seek refuge in City Hall. White House senior advisor Kellyanne Conway was on Mornings with Maria on the Fox Business Network.
Unbelievably crazy that we have mayors flagrantly saying we're going to defy the president's executive order. And for what purpose? To harbor illegal immigrants.
The term sanctuary city, by the way, describes up to 300 communities that have policies protecting the nation's 11 million illegals from deportation. President Trump and congressional Republicans are still learning to understand each other. That was evident on day one of the party's retreat in Philadelphia yesterday when they fell short of reaching agreement on a legislative agenda they hope to enact this year. That said, Mr. Trump has emerged from his earliest days in the White House with a new title, perhaps, Schmoozer-in-Chief. He's hoping to build relationships with Republicans and Democrats that would advance his agenda. Building relationships with lawmakers, by the way, is fairly new territory for those around for the Obama administration. More from Jordan Fabian, reporter at The Hill. He spoke with us just outside the White House. Jordan, what are you seeing?
Well, President Trump has clearly shown a greater liking for schmoozing and, you know, hosting members of Congress at the White House than his predecessor did, President Obama. And I think Donald Trump is hoping to forge the kind of relationships he needs with those lawmakers to advance his agenda. It's been striking the degree to which Trump has spent time with lawmakers during his first week. He hosted them over here at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue for a reception with some fancy appetizers and drinks on Monday night, hosted meetings with leaders in both chambers of Congress later on, and he appeared at a Republican retreat in Philadelphia to speak to lawmakers again.
Mm. Drinks at the White House, and he's not even a drinker. Pretty good.
That's right. He's really going out of his way to make those leaders feel comfortable, although we heard from one of them, Senator John Cornyn, that it was a bit much to put out the booze out there, and most of the leaders in the room stuck to Diet Coke.
Oh, okay. But still, I suspect that lawmakers like that, sort of being courted or entertained, whatever.
Absolutely. I think a lot of lawmakers in both parties really felt shunned or at best and ignored at worst under President Obama. You know, President Obama took an early interest in trying to interact with these members, but over time, he's preferred to spend time with his family. And I think a lot of lawmakers think that if he spent more time with them, he could have gotten more things done. Now, President Obama long disputed that notion, saying that Republicans were sort of out to get him the whole time, and as much effort as he did to it, nothing was going to change. I think what President Trump is trying to do is build new relationships and take advantage of the ones he already has. One of those folks is Senator Schumer, the minority leader in the Senate. Obviously, both of them hail from the same home state of New York. Trump has known Schumer for over 30 years, and he's hoping that he can get some Democratic votes for things like infrastructure and trade deals that from Democrats that he might need. Those two policy areas are where he has some differences with Republicans. So that'll be a relationship to watch going forward.
We're speaking with Jordan Fabian, White House correspondent at The Hill. His piece is called Trump Becomes Schmoozer-in-Chief. Do you get the sense that this reaching across the aisle is going to translate in this environment into getting stuff done?
I think it remains to be seen how far it gets him. This is a deeply polarized town. And even more so now that Trump's in the Oval Office, obviously, after the type of campaign he ran. You know, for all the overtures to Senator Schumer, what we're hearing is that he's not going to fall victim to President Trump's charm, and he's going to stick with his guns and stick by the Democrats and not really compromise on too many areas with the president. And another sign of tension, President Trump was not invited to Democrats' congressional retreat later this month in Baltimore. That's an invitation that the minority party usually extends to a new president. As you might recall, President Obama got into a huge discussion with House Republicans when he was invited to their retreat in 2010. And Donald Trump's not even going to get that opportunity because of the ill will the Democrats feel toward him. So remains to be seen again how far this charm offensive gets him.
Mm. Thanks, Jordan. That is White House correspondent Jordan Fabian from The Hill. Outside the White House, 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Don't forget, by the way, you can follow us on Twitter with the username at This Morning Show. You can follow me directly on Twitter at Gordon Deal. There is a big discussion trending this morning on the movie Fletch, which I referenced last hour as a possible musical on Broadway. It's a great idea, right?
Transition seamlessly from presentation to meeting and from work to home with the Dell Latitude 13 7000 series, the laptop that takes care of business. The powerful performance and incredible battery life from this reliable business-class PC featuring Intel Core processors lets small business employees do their best work wherever work takes them. Learn more at Dell.com/radio. That's Dell.com/radio.
Good Friday to you. Welcome aboard. Plenty of buzz among students at a Central Florida middle school. Two teenagers were arrested yesterday after police uncovered their plan for what's described as a Columbine-style mass shooting at their school. We get more now from This Morning's Mike Gavin.
Police say the unidentified students, ages 13 and 14, were charged with conspiracy to commit murder and placed into the custody of the Department of Juvenile Justice. Authorities say they were initially tipped off about the plans on Tuesday. Witnesses indicate that some students have been warned not to come to school today. The following day, the two students admitted that they had discussed a mass shooting at the Villages Charter Middle School in the town of Lady Lake, about an hour northwest of Orlando. Firearms were recovered from both suspects' homes. Gordon.
That stuff rattles you to the core, right, if you're a parent of a child that age. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, Jennifer Koschenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, President Trump is promising Mexico will pay for his massive border wall through a 20% tax on products imported from south of the border. But there's great ambiguity about the proposal, including what items would be affected and if such a tax would even be legal. Mexican Foreign Minister Luis Videgaray says such a tax would only hurt the American people.
You're going to make things ranging from avocados to appliances to flat-screen TVs. You're going to make them more expensive, and that's not that's going to be paid by the American consumer.
Talk of a tax pummeled the Mexican peso and raised eyebrows today in Asia, where exports to the U.S. drive growth in many economies. Japan's foreign minister says he's anxious to meet with U.S. officials to thoroughly explain how Japanese companies have been contributing to American society, including creating jobs. President Trump's chief White House strategist says the media should keep its mouth shut. In an interview with the New York Times, Stephen Bannon called the media the opposition party of the new administration and should be embarrassed and humiliated by the unanticipated election result. Asked if he was concerned that Press Secretary Sean Spicer lost credibility after an opening press conference peppered with false information, Bannon replied, "We think that's a badge of honor." The NFL says fewer concussions were sustained in 2016 than in the previous year. Analytics showed the total number of concussions reported in all practices, preseason, and regular season games in 2016 was 244, down 11.3% from 2015. But the league admits the numbers require deeper study, and they don't know whether the higher numbers are in part attributable to additional medical personnel at games or increased awareness among players of the danger of concussions or a little of both. Scientists have grown human cells inside pig embryos, a very early step toward the goal of growing livers and other human organs in animals to transplant into people. But such human-animal research has raised ethical concerns, and researchers say any growing of human organs in pigs is very far away.
That has to be exciting stuff to be working on.
Yeah, definitely.
When you come up with some evidence like that.
Mm-hmm.
Man. Changing the world, right? 23 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. When was the last time you wrote a check for groceries, if ever? Check writing may be dying, but it isn't dead yet. A sliver of consumers still clings to paper and pen, foregoing the ease of plastic for the rigor of balancing their checkbooks every month. Who are these people? Here's Wall Street Journal reporter Robin Seidel. Robin, explain the story.
Well, believe it or not, there are still plenty of people who write checks in the checkout line, whether it's for groceries or Target or Walmart. And, of course, whenever you mention this to somebody, they always say, and that's the person that I always get behind online when I'm in a rush, the person writing a check.
You paint a funny picture of saying how kind of the back of the line scrambles when they see an older person pull out a check.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. I've heard people say that endlessly, and actually somebody that I know sent me an email today saying, yeah, those kind of people make me want to, you know, put darning needles in their eyes or my eyes as I have to wait for them.
The thinking here for the check writers is what? They're just not embracing plastic, or they feel more secure, or what?
It's, you know, it's really a mix. I mean, people want to pay the way they want to pay. And a lot of these people have told me, you know, I'm not a Luddite. I buy things online. But when it comes to certain types of purchases, I just feel more comfortable paying by check. I use credit cards. I use debit cards. But sometimes I just want to pay by check. And it's my right. And if you don't like it, too bad.
See, now that struck me, though, if you were looking for security, you'd go cash, right? Because, I mean, the check still has your account number and a routing number on it.
Yeah, no, that's true. I can't make that much sense out of it. But a lot of people say they feel more secure using a check, and I think that's because there's been so much publicity about credit card breaches, although, of course, as we all know, you know, you're not responsible for any charge on your credit card if you didn't make the purchase, but that's not good enough for them, and I guess they just don't want to carry around a lot of cash, and, you know, usually it's for it's not for a couple of bucks, although plenty of places will still accept a check for a couple of bucks, but it's just what makes them feel comfortable.
We're speaking with Robin Seidel, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Her piece is called, "Go Ahead, Write a Check for Your Coffee. I've Got All Day." What about acceptance of personal checks?
You know, shockingly, an awful lot of, especially the big stores, still take checks. Walmart, Costco, Target, there's tons of them. They take them because they know that a certain percentage, although it's dropping, it's a small number of their customers like them, so they're not going to turn them away and tell them that they can't pay the way they want to pay.
What do millennials say about this? Because as you point out, sometimes they just, quote, zap money to each other, like through an app of some kind, like over their phones.
Well, it's funny. I've got friends who have had to teach their kids how to write a check because they have no idea why they would ever need to write a check. And I spoke with one millennial whose parents taught her before she went to college that she needed to learn how to write a check and what it meant because they thought it was a life skill. But she had no idea that you could still pay by check in a store, and she was kind of mystified by it.
Thanks, Robin. Wall Street Journal reporter Robin Seidel. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
If you're familiar with cloud computing, you probably know that Amazon Web Services offers a complete set of secure compute, storage, application, and deployment services that help companies launch and scale their IT infrastructures while lowering costs. But did you know that you're still responsible for protecting your own AWS-based assets, meaning your applications and data, from advanced cyber threats? Protect your AWS with Barracuda Networks Advanced Firewall Solutions. Visit AWS Marketplace or Barracuda.com/AWS to learn more.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Glad you could be with us on this Friday, January 27. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. A 20% tax on Mexican imports could help pay for the border wall. Miami-Dade, no longer a sanctuary city. Two teens arrested for planning a school shooting in Central Florida. Annual March for Life takes place today in Washington. Today is also International Holocaust Remembrance Day. British Prime Minister Theresa May visits the White House. How about this? OKC's Inez Kanter punched a chair in frustration last night, broke his forearm. Nice job, genius. And why we're closer to the destruction of all humanity. That story in about 20 minutes. Well, the White House, as you've heard this morning, has floated the idea of a 20% import tax to pay for a wall along the length of the Mexican border. As you know, President Trump has vowed that Mexico will pay for it in some way. But what might that mean for us, the American consumers, or the U.S. economy? We're joined now live by Leonard Raskin, financial expert and CEO of Raskin Global, a money management firm based in Maryland. Morning, Leonard. What would a 20% tax on Mexican imports mean for us?
Well, it could certainly mean higher prices at the stores, higher prices on cars that come in through Mexico, higher prices on some American goods that Mexican components are a part of. All that's certainly possible depending upon how they implement, if they implement, this 20% tariff.
What percentage? Would you be able to identify how much the cost of something would rise?
Not particularly. It's going to be difficult to say that a 20% tariff is going to increase the prices directly 20%.
Yeah.
But certainly we'd see a push up. But I think one of the things that our current president, the art of the deal, is floating out there is, as he said, he wants Mexico to pay for this wall in some way or another. I think the idea is to get the upper hand in the negotiations, and certainly with 80% of Mexico's exports coming into the United States, I don't know that they have the strong hand on the art of the negotiation here.
Yeah, I was going to say, because there was a story in the Wall Street Journal today that said this prolonged uncertainty about trade and U.S. relations could hurt the Mexican economy and foreign investment. So is that basically what you're saying, that the U.S. could have the upper hand in negotiations?
Yeah, well, it already has. If we look just since the president has been installed, we've seen the Mexican economy start to take a little shake. We've seen the peso get hit pretty hard. And so if the Mexican economy starts to continue, or not start, but continue that downward spiral, you've got a president in Nieto at home in Mexico who already is not a favored son, who may be under more pressure to do something to save his economy, and the last thing he wants to do is fight the bear, if you will.
Okay, right. So generally speaking, do you think that the American consumer would be willing to pay a little more when it comes to buying those goods, say, if they thought it meant, you know, a stop to illegal immigration from Mexico?
You know, everybody says they would, and I think one of the things we have to address is the fact that everybody says a lot of things when it doesn't matter. In my business, for instance, we advise people all the time about how to invest. We talk about owning stocks, diversifying, and holding for the long term. Everybody says they want to do that.
Yeah.
The market goes down, and suddenly, not so much.
Right.
So everybody says, you know what, I'd pay a little more for those things that I buy if it meant more American jobs,
yep,
less illegal immigration, better economy at home. And then prices go up, and people maybe scream, hey, you know what, I want those cheap goods at Walmart again. I really don't want to pay too much more.
Yeah.
So it's great in theory. Whether it'll come to fruition, if it actually happens, yet to be seen.
Right. Might not walk the walk, right? And we're speaking live this
That's
morning
right.
with Leonard Raskin, financial expert and CEO of Raskin Global, a money management firm based in Maryland. What about, say, American factories that get their goods from Mexico? How might a 20% import tax affect them?
Yeah, absolutely. Same thing. I mean, a tariff ultimately ends up in the hands of the purchaser of the goods. The one thing that could be going in our favor relative to that is, as I said before, we've seen a devaluation of the peso. So if the peso continues to lose value and the dollar continues to strengthen, well, then we might be in a situation where that would offset some of the tariff costs, and it may not be so bad after all.
Mm. Could Mexico retaliate in some way?
Oh, sure. You know, they absolutely can. But their economy, if it starts to shake, their people are going to have to pay more for our goods coming in if they retaliate with tariffs on our products.
And right.
If they can't afford it, you know, it's all around a bad deal. But the fact of the matter is, free trade is a great thing. It helps many countries, helps certainly both America and Mexico if we have free trade. The problem is we really don't have it. We haven't had it. Government interferes, currencies interfere, manipulation interferes. So all those things put together, free trade would be a great thing if we could actually experience it.
Yeah, very good. Hey, thanks for sharing a few minutes this morning. Nice talking to you. Leonard Raskin, CEO of Raskin Global, a money management firm based in Maryland. It's 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Good Friday to you. Time now for our weekly look at what we've been searching for the most online for the past few days. We're joined live by Google Trends expert Charlotte Smith. Hey, Charlotte. Mary Tyler Moore, of course.
Of course, and good morning. TV icon Mary Tyler Moore passed away this week at the age of 80. She's best known for her roles on The Dick Van Dyke Show and, of course, The Mary Tyler Moore Show. Lots of people coming to Google talking about how much she was missed, especially for her advocacy. You know, apparently she was a role model for many in the diabetes research field.
Mm. Also, Oscar nominations, kind of a surprise, because no big money movies got nominated really at all.
Yeah, no, you're right. I was actually surprised as well because La La Land got 14 nominations, which is tied for the most in Oscar history. I thought it was a good movie. I didn't know if it was 14 nominations worthy. But, you know, also the nominations were notably more diverse this year, which actually sparked, like, a lot of compliments for the Academy. So happy for them. It looks like this will be a less controversial Oscars year.
Did you see Manchester by the Sea?
I did. Sad
so,
movie.
So that's the only movie I've seen, right? Because I'm not much of a movie seer. So that's the movie I tend to ride all the time, like this time of year. The only movie I see is the one I cheer for the most. So which was better, La La Land or Manchester by the Sea in your mind?
You know, Manchester by the Sea.
Oh,
all
yeah?
The way.
It's heavy,
yeah,
though, isn't it? That's a heavy movie.
It is. But, yeah, you know, sometimes you got to mix it up a little bit.
Okay. Dow Jones Industrial Average. Yay. 20,000.
Well, we don't know if it's a yay yet, but yes, the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed above 20,000 on Wednesday. For the first time in history, we saw a lot of searches for what is the Dow after it
really?
Went up 20,000 points. Actually, even though the Dow Jones hit a high this week, the highest search interest for it was back in 2008 during the recession.
How about that? We're speaking live this morning with Google Trends expert Charlotte Smith. I want to play a clip because we got the new Ed Sheeran music video out from his song Castle on the Hill.
I'm on my way, driving at 90 down those country lanes.
All right, so explain this one. What's going on with Sheeran?
This is so funny, actually, because the song is about nostalgia, and the video really reflects that because it's shot entirely in Ed Sheeran's hometown, and all the actors in the video are actually just students from his high school.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
I did not realize
that. That was wild.
Yeah, very good. And finish up, too, because Erin Andrews is making news this week.
She is. is. So Sports World found out this week that Erin Andrews has been battling cervical cancer. You know, she's an avid football fan. She's a sportscaster. So in spite of this news, she's vowed to never miss a game and will be broadcasting live from Super Bowl 51 in a few weeks.
Very good.
Good for her.
Yep, good for her. We'll be cheering for her. Thanks, Charlotte. Google Trends expert Charlotte Smith with us live this morning. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you're with us. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Morning. President Trump and congressional Republicans struggled to understand each other at the party's retreat in Philadelphia yesterday as they fell short of reaching agreement on complex policy issues such as taxes and trade. Less than a week into the new administration, GOP lawmakers are struggling with how to respond to a president who ignites public feuds and shows little deference to Capitol Hill's traditions. House Speaker Paul Ryan.
And I think we're going to see unconventional activities like tweets and things like that. And I think that's just something that we're all going to have to get used to.
Ryan added that they are on the same page on the agenda. President Trump says opposition to waterboarding seems so foolish and so naive. Trump made the comment about the enhanced interrogation technique, which simulates drowning, in an interview on Fox News last night. Trump said waterboarding absolutely works and questioned whether it's torture. The Kremlin says Russian President Vladimir Putin may speak with Trump by phone tomorrow, which would be the leader's first conversation since Trump took office. The two leaders spoke by phone soon after Trump's election victory in November, pledging to work together to resolve issues such as international terrorism and extremism. Today, Trump will meet with British Prime Minister Theresa May. The Amtrak engineer involved in a deadly crash in Philadelphia has sued Amtrak, saying it failed to address reports that people were throwing projectiles at trains. Brandon Bostian says he was left disoriented or unconscious when something struck his train before the May 2015 crash, but federal investigators say the train was not hit. 8 people were killed and more than 200 injured. And the hottest toy of the holiday season has now hatched a lawsuit. A California woman has filed a class action suit against Spin Master, alleging the Hatchimal toy she bought for her daughter never popped out of its egg. The toy is a plastic egg that you rub or tilt until a Furby-like interactive creature is electronically stimulated to poke its beak through. The $50 toys were the hit of the year, with parents lining up outside stores and bidding up sales on third-party sites to $350. But the enthusiasm turned to rage when the presents were open and kids couldn't get them to hatch.
Hmm. Maybe is it lack of understanding on the kids' part?
I couldn't tell you.
Maybe if they put down the phone and paid more attention to these little things, they would hatch.
Let's sue. You know, we never sued over sea monkeys. They never worked.
Sea monkeys.
Do you remember those things?
I don't remember sea monkeys.
They were supposed to grow in the water and turn into these little creatures.
Oh, man. No, I don't remember that.
Yeah. All right.
What's the statute of limitations on that?
I know, right?
Could we revisit that?
Let's do a class action lawsuit.
We'll piggyback onto the Hatchimal toy. Fixing old wrongs from our childhood. 5 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. A panel of scientists and scholars have announced a change to the doomsday clock, which shows how close we may be to the end of the world. It moved from 3 minutes until midnight to 2.5 minutes until midnight. The 12 o'clock hour represents the destruction of human civilization. The Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists magazine first set the clock 70 years ago, and with yesterday's announcement, it's been adjusted 22 times since. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.
End of the world.